This is Chris.
This is Lindsay.
And Kyle.
And you are listening to episode 2 of Marooners Talk, titled Bo Knows Podcasting. Our last episode was titled Feeling Like a Ham and Mustard Shake, which was a reference to the Stone Temple Pilots interstate love song, where it's a very common line that's been misheard as feeling like a ham and mustard shake, but is actually
feeling like a hand in rusted shame.
Now, go home, listen to that song, and see which one of us you think is right.
Me?
No.
Because those are probably the words.
They are, yeah, but it's more fun if you think about having a ham and mustard shake. I mean, hey, Scott Weiland was high most of the time. You don't know, maybe he really did want a ham and mustard shake. Maybe it just sounded amazing to him in his drug-induced munchy state. I don't know.
Probably. Dude was on heroin for, like, forever.
More like heroin was on Scott Weiland forever, huh?
Oh. Oh, snaps, you got him there.
Oh, yeah, I did.
Oh, man.
My wit knows no bounds. Okay, well, you know what? Let's get right into it then. Last week we discussed a little bit about Nintendo Hard in reference to the frustratingly controller-smashing vertical moving levels that kill you if you don't continue moving vertically.
Oh, hi, Castlevania.
Yeah. Castlevania, Explosion Man, it is this list of asshole levels that developers have decided to put into these games. I think, here's my opinion on that. Developers put these into the games because the game isn't the real game. You don't beat the game by finishing the levels. You beat the game by beating the developer, by beating those vertical scrolling levels. That's the real victory, because that developer is putting that level in there to say fuck you to the player, because they know it's frustrating, they know it takes all the fun out of the game, so by beating that level, you're beating the developer.
Yeah, I'd prefer if developers just weren't dicks. That would have made my life so much simpler back in the day.
That's true.
Well, it kind of makes you wonder if they're just, like, sitting there in the corner, you know, with, like, capes on and a bubbling cauldron and, you know, a fog machine, and they're kind of just like, mwahaha, I wonder, what level can we put in to piss off our consumers? You know what I mean? Like, they're really getting methodical about it, knowing that really what they are putting into a game, it's going to piss people off, and they're thinking, oh, this is just so funny, let's throw it in there for jokes.
Yeah. Yeah, when they were making Battletoads, they had to know what they were doing.
Oh, God.
The Battletoads. Snake level.
Yeah.
Well,
and the
bike.
Level with the motorcycles or whatever it is, where you have to time everything just
tunnel.
Perfectly. Oh, God.
Fuck that.
That level, that turbo tunnel level, is one of the more frustrating levels from when I was a kid. Absolutely.
Even now. I have muscle memory to let me do that thing perfectly because I spent so many hours just trying to get level fucking 3 of Battletoads.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that difficulty curve was just ridiculous. You know,
there was no curve. It just goes up. And outside of Battletoads, birds. Little flying things. Birds and Medusa's heads from Castlevania and the birds from Ninja Gaiden. Just anything that'll knock you off a platform.
Mm-hmm.
Because back in the day, you didn't just flash or see some blood appear on the screen when you got hit. You went like 10 feet backward. And if you were trying to jump, birds would kill you every single time.
Yeah. Well, I know, sweetie, you hate the little guy in the cloud that throws the shit in the Mario games.
Lackey 2.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hate and I don't hate him. More than him, I hate the sun.
When you're in the jar.
That asshole. No. The smiling mask in Super Mario 2, when you go down into the jar to grab the key, and the mask starts coming off the wall.
I think his name is Fanto.
Fanto, okay. All I know is, to me, his name is Asshole.
I was just about to say, like, yeah, his name is Asshole. I'm sorry, Kyle, but you are wrong.
His name is Asshole in the jar that chases you when you grab the key.
Precisely. That's how we all know him and love him, or hate him. But it was just, I hate that guy. God damn. And then the sun in the desert levels, mm-hmm. because he'd always do those little swoops at you that were kind of bullshit sometimes until you started timing it right.
I hated Big Bertha. In the water levels, the really, really giant fish.
Oh, the giant fish.
Yeah, yeah, Big Bertha.
Yeah, the prelude to the friggin' eel from Mario 64. Which legit gave me nightmares. That
eel didn't bother me. I didn't have much of a problem getting past the eel and getting down into that tunnel behind it.
Mm. I also hated the little tiny fish where they'd be sleeping. And then if you went and you swam near them, they were all of a sudden awake, like, oh, I'm going to get you. And then you're kind of swimming like, no, while you're trying to dodge, like, jellyfish and
I hated the jellyfish.
Shit. Yeah.
Especially the jellyfish that had the smaller jellyfish trailing behind them.
Oh, yeah, the babies.
Oh, jackasses.
I know, we're like, God damn you, Mario. Well, what was it? Remember when we were playing the Super Mario Brothers, the new one on the Wii, the four-player? Remember at the end,
Bowser? Oh, I remember playing that.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, Bowser was ridiculously difficult at the end of new Super Mario Brothers on the Wii.
Yeah. Have you played it, Kyle?
I've played it, and I'm going to tell you why I'm not going to play it anymore, especially with four people. You will always find one asshole who will no longer be your friend, because while three people are working together, the fourth person is just running ahead as fast as they can and dragging everyone along behind them.
No, you know what my problem with new Super Mario Bros. Wii is? My wife. Because when we played together, 90% of my deaths could be solidly attributed to her not paying attention when she was jumping. Like, and I'd start jumping across the gap, and then she'd jump, bounce the top of my head, dump me down into the gap, and get across to the other side safely. And it wasn't intentional. It's just because she doesn't pay attention.
Well, no, okay, here's the thing, though. Honestly, he always was Mario, and I think I was, like, Luigi, or, you know, one of the other... one of the other little castaways that don't mean anything. But, here's the thing, like, when you're used to playing a Mario game by yourself, you're always used to seeing yourself as Mario.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So whenever I'd see Mario, the natural, the instinct in me is saying, okay, oh, here I am, I'm moving. So I'm thinking as I'm moving along that it's really, really hard to describe, but if you're used to playing a single player game where you are a particular character, but then a multiplayer version of it is introduced and then you're having to play like a different color or something else, it's really, really easy for me. Maybe it's because I'm naturally blonde, I don't know, but it's easy for me to be like, okay, that is my character, just because I've been playing as that character. I mean, I've been playing as Mario, not Luigi. Fuck Luigi. But I've been playing as Mario for over 2 decades. So
Luigi gets no love.
Fuck him.
Sad.
Well, you know, he got Daisy.
Yeah, he got Mario's, like, bi-blows after Mario was done with her. Yeah. That's not cool.
Yeah, Mario was with Daisy first. Remember the Game Boy game?
Yeah, Mario got tired of Daisy, tossed her aside, and left Luigi to grab her. That's all it was.
That's okay. She's hotter anyways than Peach.
Sloppy seconds.
It's all right. It's okay.
Peach has a better inheritance.
Oh, Jesus. No, I don't know. Daisy, she's just better. And plus, Daisy doesn't get captured as often, which means she has to be like a million times smarter.
No one wants her.
No. She's smart. She gets like a kung fu grip on Bowser's balls, like, don't you kidnap me, asshole. And then that's the end
of that. Here's the thing. If she gets a kung fu grip on Bowser's balls, I'm sure he'd be kidnapping her much more often, because I know he's not getting any out of Peach.
Bowser has no balls.
Even Mario isn't getting any out of Peach. I mean, he gets a kiss every now and then, or a cake.
Oh, I love cake.
To this day, I think that Mario 64, that was a double entendre, but when Mario actually rescued her, she's like, oh, I guess I'm going to have to make a cake now. We're celebrating.
Right.
I'm covered.
Here's the thing. Those red overalls are concealing giant blue balls.
Fuck. Poor Mario.
Yes, poor Mario. And poor Luigi.
Nah, they're both
so sad.
Well, Luigi deserves it.
Why?
I don't know. He just sits at home, and Mario's like, oh, I'm off to go on another adventure. And Luigi's like, well, if you die, I'll be here to take over.
Well, what about Toad?
Oh, well, fuck him. He's just Toad. He's the most useless character in Mario 2.
Yeah, but what
and he's the one that's, whenever you get to the end, your princess is in another castle. I fucking hate you, Toad. How do you get here all the time?
No, you know what? That's a really good question. How does he get to the castle so easily without any kind of problem when you have to go through and fight your way through, what, like 10 levels to get there?
He's got hacks.
Fucking mad hacks.
Mm-hmm. Toad is always in god mode.
Toad's an asshole. No, you know what? You're right. Toad's an asshole. Fuck Toad.
He's so cute.
There
He's
we go.
He's a jerk.
Poor Toad. Oh, man.
Where are we?
I don't know. We're, I guess we're still on Nintendo Hard, kind of.
Oh, Nintendo Hard. Yeah, fucking Mario Brothers.
I never had too many problems with Mario Brothers, other than a few things I've mentioned so far. Some of the levels in Mario Brothers that would occasionally give me trouble are the ones on the elevated toadstools that it was like the side-scrolling level.
Ah, yes.
And you'd have to keep ahead of the scroll, otherwise you'd get pushed off or something.
Levels that, 4 and 5 in the first stage of Super Mario Brothers 3.
Yeah, and it's just that it's the same concept as the vertical scrolling level.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little easier to deal with a horizontal scrolling level. In my opinion, but still, I like to play at my own pace.
Yeah, no, I hate it because then the music speeds up and then it brings on like this sense of panic, like, holy shit, I got to the end, because, you know, you kind of think like, I really am going to die.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I know that if I don't make it, I'm not going to die. Like, you know, but I'm just saying it gives you that sense of urgency. So that's what I meant by it.
I do like how the music speeds up, though, because it's a good reminder of, oh, yeah, I have a limited amount of time left, and I'm cutting it close.
You're
always hosting the water levels. I spend so much time shooting fish in the water levels in Mario, and then it's like, oh, wait, I get to the flag.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it's just like in Sonic the Hedgehog, when the music would speed up in the water levels, when you have to go ahead and get another air bubble.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, no, it would, the music would change a little.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but then it would speed up, yeah. And then you hear, bop, bop.
Yeah, I loved that noise.
Yeah, it was.
But yeah, Mario, I generally will refuse to play a water level in Super Mario 3 without the frog suit. Like, mm-hmm. I will go and I will find as many frog suits as I can, and then I'll go do the water levels.
Yeah. I
hate those things.
Well, I mean, with speaking of like Nintendo Hard and stuff like that, do you think that, you know, because of the internet, because of, you know, things like Game Facts and other sites that have walkthroughs or tutorials, or, you know, how people have things like capture cards to where they could go ahead and record, you know, boss battles or sections of the games that are tripping up a lot of people and saying, you know, hey, this is where you go. You know, because back in the day when we were kids, you know, we didn't have anything like that.
Well, I will say we did have Nintendo Power. We did have Wizard. We had these magazines that would come out with kind of like tips and tricks and sometimes, you know, walkthroughs. And there were game guides, not as common back then. But
right. Yeah. Still. Game guides, they weren't really as common and they weren't really as thorough as they are now. Yeah.
But there were still resources that could help with at least the bigger things.
Yeah, but it's not in abundance like it is now. So, I mean, do you think that because of that, because of the internet, because of all the information that's available? Because, I mean, there are times where, you know, you see people on Twitter, for example, saying, you know, hey, is anybody playing this game? I'm kind of stuck in this area. If you've gotten past it, what'd you do? You know, and stuff like that. And so, I guess what I'm trying to ask is, do you think that because we have all of this, that, you know, we find that games are easier, or are games just as difficult as they were back then? You know, because when we were playing, oh, what the hell? Bionic Commando Rearmed 2. You know, the end section, we couldn't get past that. But, I mean, I highly doubt most people are going to be able to get past it. But I don't know. I mean, are we spoiled? What do you guys think?
Well, I mean, when I was a kid, if I had a problem, I'd ask one of my friends. Say, hey, I'm stuck here. What did you do? Or, hey, come take a look at this. And, you know, so I still had that resource of, I can't do this. Let me ask someone else. I mean, it wasn't as expansive as what we have now with the internet.
Right.
But that resource was still available at a more limited scope to everyone.
Yeah, because now you can cast a wider net.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, we do have, like, game facts and stuff like that. But we kind of need it nowadays. I mean, we needed it back then, too.
Mm-hmm.
Remember back to the original Legend of Zelda? Like, there was a lot of times where I had no freaking idea what to be doing in there. Like, there were some vague hints throughout, like, trying to find Death Mountain and bombing in the right spot. And the second quest is pretty much impossible without some type of walkthrough. Like, they just expected us to wander around and try out everything in order to find things.
Yeah. And, absolutely.
Yeah, like,
go ahead.
I'm reminded of, like, the angry video game nerd, and his very first thing he did was Castlevania 2, and you have to kneel in front of a wall, and while holding the red stone, and then a tornado comes to get you, and his complaint was like, how the fuck were you supposed to figure out how to do that? And that's a common theme in all old Nintendo games of that type. Is they would just put things out there, and you'd be thinking to yourself, how the fuck was I supposed to figure out how to do that?
Right. It wasn't necessarily a matter of skill. It was a matter of trying as many combinations of as many things in as many places as you could and hoping one of them was the right one.
I have burned every single bush in The Legend of Zelda.
You never know what's under one. I mean, one of them might be important.
Right.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, see, okay, now, I had a problem, and I don't know maybe if I had, like, a bad game or something like that, but whenever I used to play the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles game, you know, I went through the part where, you know, you fight against the Foot Clan, and you got Bebop and Rocksteady, and then there's the one where you have to go ahead and remove all the bombs so that the dam doesn't explode. On that one, yeah, hello water level. And I had no problem passing those. I mean, I was like a pro passing those, but as soon as I got to the part where, you know, you drive the little car around and you're trying to find out where to go.
The part where you need a map.
Yeah, guess who never got past that part and still hasn't to this day? Me.
Yeah. Yeah. Me too. That's pretty much where my rental ended. I'm like, nope.
Well, no, like, I own the game. And, I mean, I used to try, and I would drive my little car around, you know, trying to figure out where to go. And I'd be like, oh, okay, well, here's, you know, a porthole. No, not a porthole. Manhole. Yeah, there you go. Yeah. So I'd be like, okay, yeah, I found a manhole. I'm going to go down it. Oh, wait, I can't go this way yet. Oh, these guys are too strong, and they're kicking my ass. Where do I go? And that's as far as I got. And I know that's probably, like, the lamest thing in the world, because there's going to be people that are like, oh, you can get past that? That's so fucking easy.
No, that level is a common complaint. Everyone fucking hates that level.
Oh,
And the dam level, like, the little jump you have to make before you actually get to the bomb area, and you can just walk across it. I didn't know that. I didn't know you could walk across that son of a bitch. And again, I'm aping the angry video game nerd, but that's the exact same experience I had. You can just fucking walk across that? No. Bad game.
Okay, well, now I don't feel so bad. Because, I mean, that was kind of like my one thing in, like, my little walk of shame.
Turtles 1 was asshole Turtles.
Oh, okay. All right, cool. Well, now I feel a lot better about myself. Thank you, Kyle.
Yeah, no problem. Just reliving traumatic video game memories here.
Okay. No, dude, I totally feel good about myself, so right on.
Yeah. Part of me is still inside that dam.
I don't know. With video games now, though, a lot of times you have stuff like Fable, where you have the glowing trail telling you exactly where to go.
Yeah.
Even on quests where you have to find a hidden item, the glowing trail takes you to the exact spot of the hidden item, and you have the dig
circle
button come up or whatever come up, or yeah, you have the little circle to walk into to activate the cutscene. And I don't know, I mean, on the one hand, yeah, it's nice because I don't have to Legend of Zelda it. I don't have to walk around pushing dig at every single hill in all of Albion.
Yeah.
On the other hand, for certain quests, it kind of takes the discovery out of it, I suppose. Where, you know, you're given a handful of hints and clues that are relevant and that make sense in relation to each other, and you figure it out. You just have a line telling you exactly where to go.
Now, can I was going to ask, can you turn the line off? Like, is there an option in the game where you can go ahead and disable it?
Yeah, you can turn off the glowing trail.
Oh, okay.
The thing about that is that if the line is on originally, that's how they mean for you to play the game, with a little line.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Without the line, then, because the game still doesn't give you that many clues or hints. So right. Without the line, then you're, you're playing Legend of Zelda again, except with even less information to go on.
Right, or you're basically shit out of luck.
Yeah. And, you know, it's a much larger world than you would find in Legend of Zelda or Final Fantasy.
Yeah, Albion can be pretty big. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, and I know that sometimes it doesn't feel like it. Well, in Fable 3, it didn't necessarily feel like it. I know that when you're near Bowerstone and everything, and when you go outside the town and you're around the grassy area in the forest, you know, that can be a pretty large section. But, you know, sometimes for the most part, it was a little condensed.
Well, there was less free roam in Fable 3, and the timeline it was in, there was more industrial development, so things, the cities especially, got a lot more cramped, and, you know, they needed to express that kind of cramped feeling.
Right.
But, I mean, in Fable 2, there was a lot more free roaming between cities and around cities.
Yeah, Fable 2 was huge.
Yeah.
It was nice.
Fable 2 was a fantastic game.
I know it was. I kind of like the fact, though, that they have these massive worlds that you can go and explore and stuff like that. You know, because, I mean, they had that in Two Worlds 2.
Yeah, here's the thing about Two Worlds 2. Especially with this particular conversation that we're in right now, comparing, you know, now we have quest logs and we have glowing lines telling us where to go.
Mm-hmm.
And back then, we just had to kind of figure it out. Well, Two Worlds 2 tried to mix the two concepts, it seems. For the most part, you have a quest log that tells you where to go, tells you what to do. You can set a marker on your map for each quest, and it'll show you on the map where you have to go. So it's pretty much the same as the glowing line, except without the glowing line, you just move towards the marker on your map.
Mm.
Except for one very large issue that was completely left out of the quest log, and was absolutely vital to campaign progression, to story progression.
And that was in the first chapter.
That was in the very first chapter. You're still out there. You have a mention about a character named the Tongue, I think.
Yeah.
Because he's the one who speaks for the big mob boss that you need to get in touch with for the first chapter of the game. And, you know, he's briefly mentioned earlier, but then you're sent on these quests to kind of develop your standing within that organization so that you're eligible to speak to these big people.
So you have more cred.
Right, so you have more cred. That's the only time he's mentioned. You're doing these quests, nothing else is ever mentioned about him. There's no mention about, okay, you're ready to go talk to the boss or whatever. He doesn't show up on any maps, he doesn't show up at all in the quest log. You just have to find him and know that you have to find him and know when it is that you have to find him. No hint or clue whatsoever. I was stuck. I was really frustrated walking and walking and walking. And then Lindsay looked it up online and said, oh, you have to find this guy now.
Well, see, and then
eventually I was able to find him.
Well, yeah, because, I mean, you were already like 8 to 10 hours into the game by that point. And I'd say for like, what, a couple of hours, you were not necessarily going around in circles, but almost kind of going through the areas that you had gone through with like a fine tooth comb. And I remember you showed me your quest log. And I mean, there honestly, and I'm not making this up, there really was no mention of this guy. You had completed all the quests. And you didn't have any open quests that you needed to complete or anything like that. Because as far as you were concerned, you were maybe done with the first chapter, but maybe, you know, something had happened because you didn't get the achievement for completing the first chapter yet. So, I mean, for the most part, it was kind of like, okay, well, I'm in this game. I'm pretty much at a standstill. What the fuck do I do?
Yeah, and I don't mind, you know, I don't mind a game that's like Legend of Zelda, for example, where you don't have a quest log or a list of items you need to do or anything like that, like we have a lot of now. Mm-hmm. And I don't mind a game like Fable that has a full list telling you every single thing you have to do, something, a way to track it, a way to tell you where to go. I have a problem with a game setting the expectation of having that list of things to do and then not really fully implementing it, or, you know, bugging out and forgetting to implement one piece of it, because then you're kind of flustered. You're like, well, this tells me everything I need to do, but it's not telling me anything else to do, so I don't know what's going on now.
Yeah, well, and then you kind of just feel like, you know, well, what did I do wrong? Did I do, you know, some quests out of order, you know, to where it didn't trigger a cutscene or something like that? You know, because sometimes, you know, sometimes that can go ahead and happen. You know, and I think what it is, you know, if it's side quests and stuff like that, to where it can only come up in your quest log if you talk to somebody and it triggers it, okay, that's different. But I think when it's something major and so vital to story progression and the game itself, you know, that I think that's when it's more problematic than anything else.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't mind if they're vague for, like, side quests or anything, because I'm supposed to be able to hunt those things down for myself. Like, Red Dead Redemption. They have the little treasure hunt side quests, and all you get is a little piece of paper with a vague drawing of where you're supposed to be hunting.
Yeah.
And if you've been around the map for the entire length of the game, you pretty much know the general area that they're pointing to with that type of thing. It's like, oh, the gigantic eye-looking rock structure out there. Okay, I'll hunt around there.
Mm-hmm.
They don't hold your hand. They show you the general area and are like, go find it. That's the type of thing that I think Zelda was trying to do at the very beginning. It's like, point you in the general direction. It's just they only have like a few words in order to do it.
Yeah.
Right. They didn't point you in the general direction of this rock. They pointed you in the general direction of this landmass.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking of old games.
Yeah.
Duke Nukem Forever.
Yeah.
We already know that's already coming out.
Kyle's like, fuck yeah, I know that shit's coming out. I got my receipt.
That could be the worst game ever. I'm still going to buy it.
Yeah, oh, it doesn't matter if it's the worst game ever or not. Nukem Forever.
I need to hold the game that was started during the Clinton administration.
No, like, how sad is that to think, you know, oh, okay, you know, well, you know, it's been a decade.
It's been a decade and a half almost.
Yeah, I mean, that's just, it's fucking mind-blowing because, okay, let's see, well, I'm 28, and if it was a decade and a half, I was 13.
Mm-hmm. It has been through three presidents.
Yeah, no, seriously, I think I was in like eighth grade at the time.
It was 1997 when development started on the game.
97, what was I doing in 97? So, oh, I was a freshman in high school, excuse me.
Yeah, you were a freshman. When I end of 97, I was a freshman.
Yeah,
sounds about right for me.
Dude, but that's crazy to say. Oh yeah, hey, I was a freshman in high school and development started on this game. And oh yeah, by the way, next year I turned 30.
A generation of people grew up not knowing Duke Nukem Forever as anything but a gigantic joke. That's
true.
Think of that.
Yeah,
I mean, it has become the standard for completely inept game development.
Yeah. Yeah, no, because I know that when Gran Turismo 5 kept getting pushed back, we're like, uh-oh, here we go again.
At least it's not Duke Nukem Forever.
Yeah.
Right. Here's the thing about Gran Turismo. I like racing games that are fun, so I don't play Gran Turismo.
Gran Turismo is work.
Yes, Gran Turismo is absolutely work. There's nothing fun about it.
It's gorgeous. You got to give them on the graphics, though. They are pretty.
It can.
Yes, they made work pretty.
Yeah. That, I mean, that game is beautiful, but it's a pain in the ass to play. Mm. All Gran Turismo. I can't stand any Gran Turismo or that kind of realistic sim racing game.
Yeah.
Give me Blur. I could play Blur for the rest of my life and be perfectly happy with that as my racing game.
Mm.
I'm good.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, it's good though. But anyway, no, I was
Duke
gonna
Nukem
say
Forever.
I was gonna say with Duke Nukem Forever. Did you hear about the press event that they had in Vegas, Kyle?
I heard about it.
Yeah, they had it with like strippers and stuff like that.
It was
Classy.
Duke Nukem-y.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you know what I'm really excited about? The Balls of Steel special edition that was announced in the last day or two.
No, it was today.
Today?
All right. It was today.
Yeah, what's in that?
Okay. Oh, man. All right. So you have a bust of Duke, like this big statuesque bust of Duke. And on the bottom, it has engraved Carpe Nukem.
I want
it. You get a pair of dice with the Radioactive logo on them. You get a mini deck of Duke Nukem playing cards. You get a limited edition numbered certificate of authenticity. You get a book that has Duke Nukem art over the last 14 years, I guess. The development.
Oh, that's worth it in and of itself.
Yeah. And there's...
please, there be a book.
Oh, yeah. There's a papercraft, a foldable papercraft. There's collectible postcards. A set of Duke Nukem poker chips.
God damn, they're putting a lot into this.
Well, they had to plan it.
Yeah. No, I put an article up about it today, and it's like, you know, is it worth the 14-year wait? And this is a fantastic special edition. It's $99, and it's just, it's a massive special edition. The only thing they left out, perhaps rightfully so, was a pack of bubble gum, perhaps, you know?
No, but actually, the only thing that's missing that is Duke Nukem 3D. I want a playable version of Duke Nukem 3D with that.
What about boobies? It's missing titties.
On the internet.
Oh. Yeah. I could find boobs on the internet. I don't need you, Duke Nukem.
I mean, hell, 90% of the internet is boobs, so.
Yeah.
Which is why Duke deserves to be in this era of gaming.
Absolutely. No, I mean, honestly, with the internet, what it is, this is Duke Nukem's time. This is where he can shine, you know?
Mm.
It's
well,
his world.
I was going to say, unless you're like Fox News, where they say, you know, games like Bulletstorm, it encourages rape.
Rape is done with lots of bullets.
Yeah.
It was because the names of all of the special skill shots that are in there, a lot of them have very dirty sexual connotations to them.
That's because you're shooting bullets up some guy's butt.
Precisely.
Rear
or in his crotch or, you know, any other stuff.
Yeah.
It's just more Fox News bullshit.
Yeah.
This is more anyone bullshit. Not just Fox News.
Yeah.
Yeah, everyone does that.
Mm. Yeah.
That's Jack Thompson.
Mm.
Yeah. This is his legacy, you know?
He started it. Well, you know. Hey, Kyle.
Yeah?
Did you hear about Guitar Hero?
Yeah.
What do you think about that?
Oh, Activision.
An ice cream truck.
I do. I hear an ice cream truck, too.
Oh, we don't get ice cream trucks around here.
What?
It's too cold up there.
Yeah, we have sub-zero temperatures. Activision.
Yes.
Yeah, the one bit of good news I want to say before getting into the Guitar Hero thing, True Crime was canceled. Yay, True Crime was canceled. Because those games weren't that good.
Oh, that's harsh.
They weren't.
Well,
it's Grand Theft Auto... Except it's not. It's lazy Grand Theft Auto. I never really got into that.
Well, see, I heard, and I was reading about it, that, you know, excuse me, that they really got, you know, in depth and they went through, you know, a lot of detail and stuff like that to replicate Hong Kong. And it was supposed to almost resemble like a John Woo film. And I don't know about you, but John Woo films, they kick ass.
They did that with True Crime New York, too, and that game was terrible.
I never played the first True Crime, to be honest with you.
The only good thing about the True Crime games is that they had Christopher Walken in them.
Mm.
Oh.
I
like Christopher Walken.
I mean, regardless if you like the game or not, though, it does suck for the people who were working on the game.
Yeah, that is true.
Yeah. You know, because now they're out of a job. and with the gaming market being so competitive. But you know what I mean? It's, I think that, well, I hope that for those who are out of a job, especially the ones, you know, who are working on Guitar Hero and everything like that, that, you know, another company goes ahead and recognizes, you know, what they're capable of and stuff. So
when all that was announced, I did see a couple of game companies on Twitter saying, hey, you know, we're looking for good ex-Activision devs. You know, we have openings for you. So a lot of those smaller game companies are like, hey, you know what? Come on, we'll take you on. We'll pick you up. So there is a lot of
good
camaraderie, yeah, I guess.
No one is blaming the developers for Activision stupidity.
Right. Oh, no. Absolutely not. You know, I don't really know what to say about it, because I don't really know what goes through the minds of the people who are running the company. But I can just say that's with anybody though. But I can honestly say that from a consumer standpoint, there were a lot of music games. Yeah. I think that, you know, maybe they should have spaced the installments out a bit more than what they were doing.
There was a great deal of oversaturation for the whole music game market.
Right. I'm saying that I think that they should have spaced it out, you know, a bit more. Right.
We started getting like Green Day expansion packs, and it's like, no, are you looking at what Rock Band is doing? You can just download individual songs.
I was going to say, I think if they went and they released, you know, like a good game, you know, maybe doing patch updates that would recognize new peripherals that were coming out for it, and then just got really heavy on the DLC. I think maybe that's what could have done it. And, you know, it's really sad because I was genuinely excited for Warriors of Rock that just came out, I think it came out in November, because I remember they made, you know, a really big thing about it at E3 last year. Do you remember that? That was when they had Maynard of Tool come out, and he sang Bohemian Rhapsody, what is his name? Billy Howardell, the guy who worked with him with A Perfect Circle, and also is in Ashes Divide. He came out and did the guitar. And I mean, they really made, you know, a really big thing about the new Guitar Hero game coming out, you know, how it was going to be this, that, you know, everything in between. They got the exclusive rights to go ahead and put in Telephantasm, the new album from Soundgarden, yeah, to where it was certified platinum before it even came out. You know, so they were doing all these things to where...
Because it's a new goddamn album from Soundgarden.
Oh, well, you know, yeah.
Soundgarden is freaking awesome.
Yeah, but they were doing it right, you know, and I don't know, I just...
Here's the thing with Activision.
It's sad.
From what I've seen of them, they'll buy up these development companies that are doing really cool work. They won't really market the Activision developed games that they have these small development companies do after they've brought them in.
Especially like Blur.
I didn't see commercials for Blur. Mm-mm. I didn't see shit for Blur except, you know, maybe something on Kotaku or Joystick every now and then.
How did we even find out about Blur? Oh, that's right, the beta.
Yeah, no,
beta.
Was the Blur commercials the one that was making fun of Mario Kart too?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, then that's another big problem, because not only is Blur did not have a lot of commercials out there, but the commercial it did have was pretty much alienating a gigantic portion of the gaming audience by saying, hey, that really fun Mario game you're playing, it's not as good as this one. So you're setting the bar pretty damn high there. It's like, oh, that's a baby's toy. And it's like, that's true. That really worked for the fucking 3DO when they did it.
When you're saying though about the marketing and the promoting for Blur, and also even with Singularity,
I didn't see much for Singularity.
No,
either.
I didn't see it either. Yeah. And Singularity was a damn good game. Well, from what I've been playing it so far, I mean, it's scary as hell, but I mean, I thoroughly am enjoying it. And I feel that, you know, I feel especially with Blur, because compared to the racing games that came out last year, there was all this hype for Need for Speed, the Hot Pursuit game. There was all this hype for Gran Turismo 5 to finally come out. you know, oh, it's not the Duke Nukem anymore. So it finally came out, you know, and then there was all this hype with first person shooters, you know, because you had your Halo, you had your Call of Duties and stuff like that. You had all of this, but
wasn't there a Forza game last year too?
I think so. I don't know.
And then there was that game Split Second, which I've actually heard is good.
Yeah.
I just haven't given it much time.
Yeah, and Blur and Split Second, they came out right around the same time, but Split Second was fucking heavy on the promotion and the advertising and the product. Not necessarily product placement, but, you know, how it was integrated to where you saw Split Second when you were doing certain things. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so, I mean, I know that they had community game nights with devs and stuff like that, and I know that, you know, Dan at Activision, One of Swords on Twitter, he's their community manager, and I know that he's done a really great job, you know, being behind Blur in holding, you know, game nights with fans of the game and stuff like that, so I know that he's done his bit, but, I mean, you know, really...
Yeah, Dan, to give Activision credit, that was a good hire for them, because Dan does a really good job of making sure people know about the games on Twitter and on his blog.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, he has no control over television advertisements, internet advertisements, actual marketing. He can just say, hey, here's a game from us. It's fun. Check it out.
Right. Yeah, and then, you know, like I said, how he does the game nights and stuff like that. So, I mean, Dan is really... He does really all that he can. You know, I wouldn't say that I wouldn't want his job because, I mean, obviously there are perks to his job, but I think in terms of what has happened with Activision over the past year, I wouldn't necessarily want it because he is more of a face associated with the company to where people are going to say, hey, well, what about Guitar Hero? What about this True Crime? You know, why didn't Blur do as well? Why didn't Singularity do as well? You know what I mean?
With the games not doing well, it just seems that Activision's one thought as to why things aren't doing well, they're not Call of Duty. Because right. The one thing we took out of them getting rid of Guitar Hero and True Crime is that, oh, we're going to focus more on Call of Duty. And I'm just thinking to myself, you can focus more on Call of Duty than you already are?
Yeah, because there's a new one that comes out every year, correct?
Yeah, it's almost like Madden.
Yeah. Well, and then I know that they have that new company, I can't remember the name of it, the new studio that they announced. I think it's located down in San Diego. It's like Beach something. I was reading about it the other day. But they're going to be handling, you know, all online Call of Duty stuff to where, you know, they said that they're never going to charge for people to do multiplayer in it. But I think, I don't know if they're going to start to get, you know, really heavy with a DLC. Which, you know, I think if they space out the actual installments of the Call of Duty games, but get really heavy on the DLC, you know, okay, yeah, that's a good move as far as I'm concerned.
As long as the game that they release is already a full game in itself,
without
DLC being necessary to get a full game's worth
for
the money.
Right. Yeah, no, that's not what I mean. I'm saying, like, okay, for
example... No, I know. I just wanted to make that clear.
Yeah, I mean, because, for example, with Halo 2, you already had, like, so much, you know, but then, you know, you had, like, the map packs that came out for it to where the map packs weren't necessary to enjoy the full game, but granted, there was a time where if you wanted to do certain parts of multiplayer, you had to have certain maps, but, you know, the game itself, map pack or not, you know, it was fantastic. I think if they go that route, you know, because, I mean, there was a really long gap between Halo 2 and Halo 3. Like, long gap.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I mean...
And I think that gap has a lot to do with the quality of the Halo multiplayer. Because they already had so much replay value in the game from the massive numbers of people playing it online,
mm-hmm.
that they didn't have that need to really put out a new full game yet. They could kind of milk the DLC for the level packs and all that kind of stuff for a while.
Yeah.
Which is fine. I mean, hell, it keeps the game from getting stagnant. It keeps the game from being oversaturated.
Yeah.
With too many releases each year.
Yeah, I was going to say, shit, if I was able to play over 9,000 games, you know, online of Halo 2... I mean, fuck, they obviously were doing something right. Yeah. So I don't know. I think regardless of your feelings of Activision, or regardless if you like the games or not, you know, it really still is sad, you know, to hear about studios getting closed down, people losing their jobs. You know, and then also earlier this week, Konami acquired Hudson Entertainment. And Hudson Entertainment, it's gone.
They acquired Hudson Soft.
No, Entertainment.
They acquired Hudson Soft, which is the Japanese branch, and then Hudson Entertainment is the American branch under Hudson Soft.
Right.
So they acquired Hudson Soft, but they closed Hudson Entertainment, which is the American branch.
Yeah.
So they have all of Hudson, but they closed the American branch, which is Hudson Entertainment.
Right. But, you know, that also means that every single Hudson Entertainment game that was going to be coming out, you know, for the 3DS, where they were going to come out with Super Bomberman, on
3DS. No!
Yep, it's all gone. Everything has been canceled, and the studio and everything, it's going to be done by the end of this month.
Yeah.
Yeah, so no more.
Hopefully. I mean, I know it might not happen, but hopefully Hudson Soft in Japan will take over some of those more popular titles like Bomberman, because Bomberman is one of their flagships.
Yeah.
Hopefully they'll realize that, you know what, there is a market for Super Bomberman in the States.
Yeah.
We'll go ahead and develop a Super Bomberman 3DS and
Bonk ship it, Adventure Island.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you figure though, Bomberman, that's almost kind of like an iconic game.
Oh, no, it's not kind of like an iconic game. It is an iconic game.
Yeah.
It's Bomberman.
I have so many memories of playing that with my dad.
Oh, I have. I can so vividly remember playing it with my friends. It was Bomberman.
Mm.
It's a simple game. It's a ridiculously simple game.
And that's okay.
But it was so entertaining, and it was so well done.
Mm.
It is an iconic game.
You know, I think especially with Hudson Entertainment, it's a shame because, you know, they just came out with this beautiful, beautiful game on the Wii, Lost in Shadow. And it graphically, it was gorgeous. I haven't had a chance to play it yet, but I know for a fact that that game is fantastic. And it's just, God, it's so sad. I mean, we're seeing things, you know, closing down left and right, you know, Bizarre, you know, Activision closed down Bizarre, you know, all the, more Activision stuff getting closed down, Hudson Entertainment. I know last year, I think LucasArts closed some things down.
Well, what LucasArts did was they decided that from now on, all of their games that they usually have been doing with a third-party developer as a licensing deal, that they would be developing all of their games in-house. So they're finishing up what they're already working on, but then there aren't going to be, from my understanding, there aren't going to be any new projects that aren't in-house, which is why Star Wars Force Unleashed 3 was canceled.
Yeah, that's a shame.
That's a real shame, because they did leave some open endings in Force Unleashed 2, and the Force Unleashed series so far has been one of my favorite gameplay Star Wars games.
Mm-hmm. They better not fuck up the Old Republic, because I will rain down holy fire, hell, and brimstone. Yeah, but I mean, LucasArts also has a hand in it, though.
Yeah, but no, I mean, from the looks of it, I mean, LucasArts would have had a hand in Knights of the Old Republic also, because it's their property.
Right.
And if you love Knights of the Old Republic and Knights of the Old Republic 2 so much, that was a, you know, that was cooperation between LucasArts and BioWare, just as the Old Republic will be.
Well, and I know
so
a lot of people.
On that collaboration, the success of that collaboration, I mean, if I were you, I'd be more hopeful than pessimistic about it, I think.
Well, I was going to say that the reason why is, and I know that a lot of people will disagree with me, especially if they've played, you know, KOTOR and KOTOR 2, that I preferred Knights of the Old Republic 2 compared to the first one. And the second one was done by Obsidian. So, yeah. That's why I'm kind of like, don't fuck it up. It scares me. But yeah, so in other bad gaming news, E3 has completely changed their admission requirements, and I didn't find out about this until a few weeks ago, and yeah, it's pretty special. it's like, I don't want to say anything like really bad about it, but on the other hand, it's one of those things where it kind of should have been mentioned.
Well, okay, here's the thing.
Ago.
Yeah. It should have been something that was publicly put out. This is what our new, these are our new guidelines for admission into E3 as on a press pass. But the reason they're doing it the way they're doing it is because they have to put a cap on how many, and I know you understand and agree with this too, they have to put a cap on how many people are there as press passes from each organization. Otherwise, it would get out of hand because there are so many people who want to go to E3, and you know, E3 does provide some amenities for the community sites who go out there. I mean, there's the internet lounge, I think you said, where
yeah.
they can, you know, you can go in and use the internet and stuff like that. And that takes a lot of organization, and there's really a limited number of people who can use that at any one time.
Right.
So their reasoning behind it is understandable. It's maybe their implementation
right.
And announcement of it that's not done quite as well.
Well, if you go and you look on the site for press registration, there's nothing on there that says that. It's more of a go ahead and register, fill out this information, you know, make sure that, you know, you're with a site that has been around for, you know, this many months, and then make sure to submit, you know, your tax ID if your site, you know, is making money off of it, you know, your business card, a photocopy of your ID, you know, stuff like that, like your basic shit that you would need if you wanted to attend PAX or any other gaming convention. But mm-hmm. The twist that they're doing this year is that they're basing it off of compete.com statistics. And the problem with compete.com is that it's inaccurate. And not only that, but it only counts U.S. traffic.
Well, it's not that it's inaccurate. Because it's accurate within its own structure.
Focus group.
Yeah, but its structure isn't actual page views or actual visitors or anything. It actually takes a small focus group. Not a small focus. Well, yeah.
2 million.
A comparatively small focus group watches their traffic and then extrapolates from that. So within its own system, it's not necessarily inaccurate relative to bless other you. Results. Bless you. But oh, relative to... but relative to realistic results of page views and unique visitors,
right?
It's a different scale,
right? And I know that they're, I don't know if they're basing it off of, you know, every 5,000 or 8,000 that you have on Compete, because I guess they're basing the numbers off of November or December of last year, or at least this is what I've heard. Since they're, you know, like I said, there is nothing for me to read. Or for it to, you know, explicitly say, you know, yes, this is what we're doing. And really the only way people have found out about it is through, you know, other journalists saying it, you know, hey, my site, this and that, you know. But, you know, like I said, it only counts United States. And, you know, what about all the other international sites that are coming in, like from England, you know, or for Europe or from Japan or, you know, anywhere or even Canada, for that matter, that are, you know, willing to spend the money, wanting to come to E3, wanting to cover this major, major convention. You know, for the gaming community, not just for the United States, but for the community as a whole. But, you know, it's basing it off of compete.com. It only counts US. It's off of a small focus group, you know. And then the other problem that we ran into is, you know, back on December 27th, we changed our site URL to where if you look up our old site name, you know, we're on there. If you go ahead and you try to look for our new one, we're not on there. So, you know, it's just it in terms of international sites, I really feel for them. I really, really do.
Well, we don't know, though. They might use some other system for looking at international sites other than Compete.
Because
it wouldn't be relevant to us as a United States site, so we might not have heard about it.
No,
it's a possibility.
No. I was looking where we get some press assets from. I went on to that website and the forum, because the site is actually UK-based. And I was looking in the forums, and there were a lot of people internationally, and they were saying that it doesn't count for international community. So it wasn't just people based in the United States. A lot of the people that were mentioning it, that were concerned about it, were from the UK. So, and they haven't had anything to say, you know, about it. And, you know, so aside from that, you know, if they are doing something for the international sites, okay, well then that's fantastic. But, you know, there are going to be sites out there where they might only be able to send one staff member. And E3, it's a pretty fucking big venue to go to. You know, I went back in 2002 and, you know, while it's a different beast now, 'cause back then, it was, I don't want to say it was open to the public, but the admission requirements were much more relaxed. And I mean, it's a huge, huge, huge fucking venue. So, you know, one person having to cover all of that, having to, you know, walk around, you know, interviews. It's just, it's a lot for one person to go and handle. So, I don't know. I mean, we'll see. Well, we're still waiting to see how many people we can get in. So, so I don't know.
We'll see what we see.
Mm. Yep.
Super Bowl movie trailers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
jump right into that, shall we? So, Kyle, what are your opinions? I know this is a topic you wanted to talk about.
I like them all, pretty much. yeah, next topic. Okay. Yeah, the one I'm probably least excited about is probably like Pirates or Super 8. And it's not because the Pirates trailer was bad or Super 8. It's just that with Super 8, it was just kind of ambiguous and a little bit E.T. So I didn't really know what to think of it.
Yeah.
And Pirates, I mean, I'm kind of sick of Pirates.
Yeah.
I saw the other three. I mean, the thing I really liked about it, Davy Jones, he's gone now. So... you know, all they
Bill
have
Nye
left.
Did a great job.
Yeah, that one of my favorite movie, sci-fi movie villains of all time is Davy Jones. But the Marvel comic movies look fantastic. Thor and Captain America, and you see a little hint of the Red Skull in the Captain America trailer.
Dude, he looks so good.
Yeah.
I really am looking forward to seeing Hugo Weaving as the Red Skull because I think that he can pull it off so well.
Yeah,
well, it's Hugo Weaving.
Yeah, whenever there's fantasy casting online for a comic book movie villain, it's like, oh, let's get Hugo Weaving, and it's like, okay.
Yeah, and for me though, it's kind of sad because whenever I see Hugo Weaving, I'm always going to think of the Agent.
Yeah, Agent Smith.
Yep.
Hey, yeah, we'll talk about Agent Smith in a little bit.
Hey.
But
yeah,
I also have to defend Transformers a little bit because I am one of the few people that actually enjoys both the movies, despite the fact that you see robot testicles in the second one.
What?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
With the with
yeah,
the two...
Devastator, the wrecking balls because he's made out of construction equipment. That's not funny.
Oh no, I refuse to watch the Transformer movies. So anything you have to say about them, I'm going to be like, really? Yeah, because I haven't seen them.
Yeah, well, they are entertaining as long as you're not expecting like the original Transformers in them. I mean, it avoids the missteps of the X-Men movies because these have at least a lot of action in them to keep you entertained while it's getting everything wrong. So
okay.
Yeah, but Transformers 3, like. They wrote Transformers 2 in the middle of the writer's strike, if you guys remember that.
Oh, I remember that.
For like 3 or 4 months, Michael Bay had complete control over what was going on in the script.
Oh, God.
And he's not a good writer. So when the writers got back, they were like, okay, we are going to have these awesome twins, like Sunstreaker and Sideswipe, I think, they were going to put in there. And they're like, okay, let's get to work. And they read the script, and it's like, what the fuck are these things? And, of course, we got the retarded Ebonic-speaking comedy robots that weren't funny.
I heard about those. Yeah. I've watched the first one. I have the first one on DVD. And, in fact, the DVD case was a special edition from Target where it's actually a transforming DVD case. You can turn it into Optimus Prime. Yeah. It looks a little weird on my shelf, but it's awesome. But I haven't seen the second one. I will eventually, I'm sure. But I had heard about the comedy Ebonics Twins and some of the other issues with the film, so I just keep holding off.
Yeah.
Well, it's Transformers. Yeah. I mean,
to be fair to Transformers 2, I mean, the really terrible parts probably take up like 5 minutes tops. It's just that they're so bad, they overpower everything else in the movie. Like there's a scene where John Turturro takes his pants off and you see a thong up his ass cheeks, like right dead center in the screen.
Oh, hell no.
And it's like,
you know, I don't need like, to see John Turturro's ass.
Well, here's the thing. I don't mind seeing man ass. I just don't think that men in thongs are visually appealing. I'll look at women in thongs.
That's the joke. It's like, this is John Turturro's ass. It's in a thong. That's funny, right? No, it's not, movie. Stop doing this.
Right.
This is like the fifth time you've done that joke in this movie. Now, to be positive, Transformers 3 has a script. They didn't have a writer's strike. And Michael Bay has publicly said, yeah, I know we done goofed on the second one. We're actually going to do better this one. And it looks like it's going to be a lot better. Like, there's a gigantic Decepticon army coming and invading the Earth. We got Shockwave from the old comics and cartoons.
Nice.
I mean, I see some toys right now. Like, Entertainment Weekly just showed some of the toys from the movie. Megatron looks like Dr. Doom, like, at the end of the second movie. Prime shoots him dead on in the face and, like, messes his face up. So now he has, like a Dr. Doom cape thing around him. What? And he turns into this evil truck thing.
What?
I mean, it's really, there's some cool stuff. It looks like it's going to be happening. And Megan Fox is gone, so yay for that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. The Captain America trailer looked kind of cool. I think it was nice that they showed, you know, how tiny, what the hell is his name? Chris Evans, how he was beforehand. And then when he comes out of it, he's just fucking massive. Yeah. And I agree with the Hugo Weaving thing. The pirates,
On Captain America, there's been... Someone did a fan edit to the Captain America trailer from the Super Bowl, and they took out the score that was in the credit in the trailer,
mm-hmm.
and they put the song from Team America World Police.
Oh, yeah.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So now there's a Captain America trailer out there with America, fuck yeah, as the soundtrack to it. And apparently... I haven't seen it yet because the only chance I had was at work, and I can't really play that at work.
Mm.
Apparently it really works.
Well, you gotta figure.
Good job, internet.
Yeah. I was gonna say you figure. But, you know, I mean, since we're talking about trailers.
Okay. X-Men, and First
we
Class.
Did talk
trailer.
About X-Men.
We did talk about X-Men, yeah. It looks beautiful, obviously. I mean, you look at it, the powers look really well done, the production quality looks fine. My problem with it is. It's supposed to be, you know, Xavier and Magneto first, you know, developing all of their ideas about mutant kind, about development and all this kind of stuff before. Mm-hmm. I mean, they were young. They were younger men in their 20s, maybe.
I think early 20s.
Yeah, something
anyway,
like
so
that.
Yeah.
You have them, and it's set in the 60s. You have Sebastian Shaw, you have the Hellfire Club, you have Xavier, you have Magneto, and for some reason... You have Alex Summers, and you have Hank McCoy, and you have Emma Frost, and you have, I mean, Mystique maybe is closer to the Magneto-Xavier age range.
Yeah, Mystique has been alive since, like, the 1600s, I think, in the comics.
Yeah, she like, doesn't her, age.
Her mutation lets her, like, just keep changing her cells so that she gets younger or whatever.
Mm. Oh, okay, well then shit, Mystique's fine.
Mm-hmm.
But... Emma Frost, Beast, Alex
and Emma
Summers.
Frost was in the Wolverine movie as a teenager, so I guess that movie's not in continuity anymore, or...
Well, here's
I
what
don't...
I was reading. The X-Men First Class movie is supposed to be a... I've seen it referred to as a prequel slash reboot.
You
which
can't have both.
Yeah, like Lindsay was saying,
nope.
They're contradictory. You either prequel to something, or you reboot something, and it's no longer a prequel, it's the first one.
Yeah, it just
but
gets confusing.
Yeah, here's the thing, though. they seem to have established themselves in the timeline of the original movies.
Yep.
Because in the trailer, you have the shot of James McAvoy, and then you have... No, I'm sorry. You have the shot of Professor Xavier's chair from the first X-Men movie.
Yeah. Before he was Professor X, he was Charles. And
yeah, right, and then you... And, yeah,
and, that, and then they show Magneto walking out with Sabretooth and Toad, I think, and you have the police cars out there from the first movie also. Yeah. And then they have Michael Fassbender, and it's like... They have this direct reference to the continuity of the original movie,
mm-hmm.
showing that age. And in that time, most of the characters that they're pulling into the first class movie either haven't been born yet, haven't developed their powers yet, or have not started interacting with Xavier and Magneto yet.
Yeah. Well, and my problem with that is, okay, so for example, because Alex and Scott, they weren't twins. They were brothers.
Alex is Scott. The younger brother.
Right. Yeah,
Scott's
yeah.
the older.
Yeah, because I was going to say, you know, okay, so Cyclops was... Okay, well, if we say...
And I have to assume that the third Summers brother is even older than Scott and Alex.
Right.
Since Scott didn't know anything about him when Sinister mentioned him.
Oh, let's not talk about Vulcan right now.
Well, no, what I was going to say, though, is that, okay, if we assume that the X-Men movies, the trilogy that we've had so far, disregarding the Wolverine movie, if we say that those movies started in the 2000s, okay, so we take it back to the 60s, okay, so there's, you know, that 40-year time gap right there. There's mm-hmm. no way in hell that if they're showing Havoc in, you know, in the 60s as a teenager, but yet then Scott in the X-Men movies, we'll say, let's 20s. Be generous. Well, yeah, we could say early 20s, or we could say, you know, even if he was in his late 20s, early 30s, there's no way in hell that there's going to be like a 30, 40 year age gap between Scott and
as the older brother,
right,
and
yeah.
Alex as the younger brother,
Because, well, and then also, first of all, with female reproduction, his mama, unless his mama was pumping out Havoc when she was like 12, I mean, even then, there's no way that she would have been able to have had Scott. Well, actually, no.
Well, it's possible. No, it's possible. It's just not as likely.
Right, yeah, but you get what I'm saying.
Yeah. Well, and here's another big thing. Now, remember X-Men 3, if you're Ooh. Brave enough to do so.
Oh, ho.
The very beginning of X-Men 3 showed Professor Xavier and Magneto going to getting Jean Grey and recruiting her into the X-Men.
Yeah.
And Professor X was still walking. They were obviously older. It took place like sometime in the 80s, I think.
Mm-hmm.
The thing about that is X-Men First Class is supposedly about how Magneto met his downfall and turned into the mutant terrorist who started the Brotherhood of Mutants.
Right.
Which means that he and Xavier are going to have their falling out during this movie, which is still in the 60s.
20 years
how the
before.
Fuck does that make sense?
Yeah, it doesn't.
Either X-Men 1 and 2 still count, and 3 and Wolverine have been thrown out, but you can't have that because X-Men 2 leads directly into whatever third movie you want to imagine happened. So...
Yeah. Well, and then then Wolverine, it did tie into the X-Men movies.
Bad as Wolverine was, it did have all the plot points right there. I mean, it showed Xavier recruiting Scott and the people who would create the actual first class of mutants at the Academy.
Mm-hmm.
That's what Wolverine ended with, him raiding Stryker's little hideout and getting his first class.
Mm-hmm.
So, what the fuck, Fox?
Well, and then also with the Hellfire Club, they didn't come around until, what, the 80s? Right? The 80s?
No, I can actually deal with the Hellfire Club being put in there because it actually does fit in the 60s, this whole, you know, Sebastian Shaw, hey, I'm doing all sorts of 60s shit and starting World War III, and I'm looking...
Yeah, I can see Hellfire Club in the 60s. It's just...
Emma Frost is totally 60s.
Yeah, she fits in the Hellfire Club. The only problem is they've already established her as a younger age in the series.
Right.
Then she would be... I mean, she wouldn't have been born according to her age in the rest of the series.
Nope.
Mm-mm.
So it's that hodgepodge mix-up of all the timelines.
In Wolverine, she was also the sister of Wolverine's girlfriend.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh, here go hell come.
Night, what was her name?
Silver Fox, Kayla Silver Fox.
Thank you. Yes.
That's just terrible. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, when you see the trailer though, like her diamond form, it looks horrible. Nightcrawler's dad is in there, and yeah. It's kind of like okay. What the fuck? Azazel.
I can't wait to see him banging Mystique because Mystique's Nightcrawler's mom.
Yeah, everybody knows that.
When Mystique and Azazel banged, Azazel was in disguise as like a baron or a lord in a castle mm-hmm. in Europe, mm-hmm. and Mystique was in disguise as some blonde lady, and they had, they had Nightcrawler. So it wasn't, even then, it wasn't like Azazel and Mystique saying, "Hey, you're red. Hey, you're blue. Let's bang.
Yeah,
we'll have a purple-ish blue kid."
Captain America.
Yeah.
They were in their forms. Well, yeah, I guess he had the disguise and then she shapeshifted. But even then, I guess then maybe in this, Nightcrawler... Well, no, see, the thing is that with the timeline that the X-Men movies were going with the age that Nightcrawler was, but then you're saying that he doesn't really age, so Nightcrawler could be alive.
Which also brings up the question, why the fuck wouldn't Mystique say anything when she sees Nightcrawler in that forest scene in X-Men 2?
Thank you! Yeah. Oh, that pissed me off, like, so fucking badly.
Yeah, in X-Men 2, we can just assume that in this continuity, she's not Nightcrawler's mother. That's fine now, except in the direction that X-Men First Class is going, oh, wait, it looks like she is going to bang Azazel or whatever the fuck his name is, so she's going to be his mother. So that just screws up the scene in X-Men 2, because now why the fuck wouldn't she say anything? Before, you could have just pretended it wasn't the case.
Well, and then it really pissed me off, though, is because, okay, so Rogue joined the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants before joining the X-Men, because she was recruited by Mystique, and then that's why she called Mystique Mama.
Right.
But then how the fuck does Rogue not know who Mystique is in all these X-Men movies? You know, and then how does she not have Ms. Marvel's powers by the time that she gets...
Well, because in the X-Men movies, that's not her backstory.
I know, but it's just, it's painful. It's painful.
I know,
for me.
But that, I mean, that makes sense within the X-Men movies for her not to recognize but Mystique because X-Men movies, that is not her backstory.
Movies are just screwing themselves up. I mean, we're not even talking about being outside of comic book continuity. I mean, that's just par for the
course.
We're
talking about them
adaptations.
Being outside of their own continuity.
Yeah, because, I mean, also with Beast, you see Beast as Beast. I'm like, no, dude, you were like... a teenager.
Well, but you see Hank beforehand also, but no, you see Beast as Beast, and that shouldn't have happened yet.
Yeah, not...
And even if Beast is a teenager during this, he's not that old during X-Men 3.
No.
He would have to be Charles's age, and he's at least a little bit younger than that.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, because see, the thing is that the only... If in this movie... Magneto is supposed to be in his early 20s, but Ian McKellen, he's like, what, in his 70s? So they'd have to go ahead and make, you know, Michael Fassbender's character, they're going to have to say that Magneto's in his 30s in order, because there's no way in hell that a 60-year-old is going to look the way that he did in the X-Men movie.
And plus, if Magneto's in his early 20s in the early 60s, how the fuck was he a 12-year-old concentration camp survivor?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
oh, this gives me warm
God
fuzzies.
Damn it, Fox.
How about
this? Give Marvel the rights back to X-Men. You don't need them anymore. You're just fucking it up.
Yeah, how about this? Fox has fucked up X-Men. They will continue to fuck up X-Men no matter what anyone says or does or thinks about it. Are we in agreement with that?
This is why I can defend Transformers, because at least it didn't do this. At least its internal logic works with each other. All the movies flow into one gigantic mess.
Now, but if we want to talk about... if we want to talk about a gigantic mess...
Hey, hi, Smallville.
Hi, Smallville. Last week's episode of Smallville saw the gang in The Matrix, Chloe knew Kung Fu... and all they had to do to exit the Matrix was believe that the world surrounding them wasn't real. Then they could shape it to their will.
I'm just waiting for an episode of Smallville where they just take the worst John Byrne Superman story ever and have him bang Big Barda in a porno movie.
Fuck you guys.
I mean, they're doing the dark side thing, bring in sleaze, yeah. have him bang Mr. Miracle's wife. Just go for it, Smallville.
Here's the
thing. You're already fucked enough.
I'd say that Smallville had jumped to the shark last week if they hadn't already done it dozens of times before that.
Yeah, Smallville has not jumped the shark. It has jumped 12 sharks, gone back, shot them in the head, launched them into space, built a bigger spaceship, and then jumped the shark corpses in the gigantic spaceship.
I hate you guys and so goddamn much right now.
Sweetie, you have to admit, last week's episode was a perfect example of Smallville bullshit.
Okay, here's the thing. In the beginning, I was like, oh, okay, you know, cool, whatever. And then they're like, oh, yeah, they have you all hooked to up to these machines. And I'm like, okay, you know, it's like, all right, you know, whatever. And then all of a sudden, you know, Chloe's just like, oh, do you trust me? And then she goes ahead and stands around the corner in a stance. Now, okay, now mind you, if her thing is if you get hurt or if you die in real life, then why the hell would you, A, not be wearing a Kevlar vest, B, not... you know, make sure that you're peeking around a corner and you're in a stance where you can actually defend yourself. But where was she hiding those two guns?
Oh, but you see, here's the thing.
Did she hide them in her vagina?
No, she's in the Matrix. She knows that the world around her is not real. She could simply conjure those guns up. And, sorry, now to bring it kind of around to re-mentioning Agent Smith, the little Matrix world of Smallville had... oh, what were they called? Were they called agents?
Or operatives? They did, or I think that's... They were, no, it's owned by Warner Brothers.
Yeah, it was...
Oh my God,
it's
owned by... It actually is the Matrix.
Yeah. No, it was either agents or operatives within their Smallville Matrix that, if they noticed something wrong, would start coming after them and attacking them. So, A, Chloe knew Kung Fu. B, they were all hooked into this computer-generated reality that they didn't know about while they were there, and they had to be awakened by someone. Three, all they had to do to unleash themselves within this world was believe it wasn't real. Four, there were agents slash operatives that would come after them if they realized that, you know, they were free of the perception of the system. It's just, I mean, come the fuck on. Honestly, Smallville.
I will admit, it got a little out there.
It got a little bullshit. That's what it got.
It got a little out there. Watch your mouth.
Bullshit.
Watch
anyway,
it.
Anyway, we're not going to have time to get to the listener question.
No, but we can always do it next week.
Okay, well, you know, our next community game night, we haven't quite figured that part out yet, have we?
No.
Okay, well, it will be Friday, February 18th at 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time.
Yeah.
Our game night tonight on Friday the 11th will be at 7 p.m. and it is going to be X-Men Arcade. Mm-hmm. You can add myself for Xbox Live. My gamer tag is X Kenobi, like the original Star Wars character.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can add Kyle for PSN, and his is...
Electroshock, all one word.
Electroshock.
Yeah.
So we'll be on playing. Mm-hmm. And once we figure out what we're going to do for next week's game night, we'll put it up on the site.
Yeah. And then, I was going to say also, if you guys have any ideas of what games you'd like to see for community game night, you know, definitely go ahead, send us a message on Twitter, on our Facebook fan page, or, you know, even go ahead and send one of us an email. You know, we'd love to see what games you guys are interested in playing. And then also, some readers have said, you know, hey, why don't you go ahead and do it on a Saturday night instead, rather than the Fridays that we've been doing. So, let us know what you guys think about that too. Do you think we should go ahead and change community game night to a Saturday, because your guys' schedules, you know, allow it? Maybe you don't have a lot of things to do on a Saturday night. I know we don't. So, definitely go ahead and let us know.
Okay. And you can let us know on Twitter, like she mentioned, at twitter.com/marooners_rock. Facebook, you can search for us on Facebook, search Marooners Rock, or if you go to our website, maroonersrock.com, you can use the widget on the right sidebar to link over to our Facebook. Like you said, if you have any questions for us to discuss, topics for us to discuss, any, you know, any suggestions about the game night or anything else, please feel free to contact us at any of those locations or to comment on this or other relevant posts on the site.
Yes.
And do any of you have anything else to say?
No, not really.
Nope.
You know, hit us up on the internets. Yeah.
All right. Cool. Well, this has been episode 2 of Marooners Talk.
Actually,
we'll see you guys. Episode 2, actually, episode 3. Who came up with that? Was it you or was it Brennan?
I don't care.
I think it was Brennan. That asshole.
Anyway, so, yeah, we'll see you guys around the internet.
Later.
Bye.